This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. As the party works their way through Mirkwood, they're at a point where they are becoming more and more desperate. And the forest doesn't seem to be helping in any way. In today's episode, we're going to start with Bilbo at the top of the trees and realizing that it appears like the forest is unending. There's something about this space. In today's world, we would call it a liminal space, something that doesn't make sense physically with our minds. This has been a genre, in a way, of content that people have been making in videos on YouTube and in fiction. But Tolkien was doing this in the 1930s, and this goes back to folklore. This is something that has its roots in the history of fairy tales. And Tolkien talks about this a lot in On Fairy Stories, which I've referenced multiple times on this podcast, and is absolutely worth giving a read sometime. And I think I'll actually do the bonus episode this week a little bit on some of the details in that I haven't gotten to yet. But before we get into the story, there are some things I want you to keep in mind, because like Tolkien does sometimes, I'm going to spoil things ahead of them happening. And of course, you've probably already read The Hobbit, so not huge spoilers. But we get to the point in the story where they start coming upon these lights in the forest, and there's a feast happening. And I want you to keep this in mind as we go through that part of today's episode, that this is highly influenced by Celtic and British fairy lore. In those traditions, fairy feasts are elaborate and they're tempting gatherings. And mortals often discover these while, well, in encroaching on the land of the Fae, basically. And like we've discussed before, this is a beautiful and yet dangerous kind of place. It's not meant for humans. And humans who intrude risk many different kinds of things, like becoming lost forever, or falling into a dreamlike trance, or getting completely trapped in a timeless realm, a realm that doesn't seem to make sense in either time or space, a liminal space. This comes from something like the Seelie Court or Thomas the Rhymer, who was whisked away to the fairyland while meeting the Queen of Elfland. Also, there are some other traditions in Germanic and Norse and also Celtic folklore. There are Will-o-the-Wisps. I always want to say Will-o-Wisps, but Will-o-the-Wisps and enchanted forest motifs that show up with lights in the woods and these mischievous spirits illuminating things along the way as travelers work their way through the woods. There's also this idea of haunted forests and enchanted forests, which are very, very similar. And also, Mirkwood itself was lifted directly from old Germanic poetry. I'm going to butcher this, but Mirkwürder, I don't even know the symbol. It looks like a D with a line through the top, which means dark wood, and often was used to describe this boundary between the mortal world and something stranger, something fairy-like. And in Tolkien's work, the elves are the fairies, the thing that is so different from the realm of the mortals, of people like hobbits and dwarves, beautiful, and of course, dangerous.
So
So Bilbo is climbing up this tree, and it's not easy to do, but eventually he makes it up. And we learn some different things by this journey of his up the tree. First of all, the dwarves are pretty impatient. They're wanting him to get up there and then tell them things, and of course everybody's hungry and exhausted, and so they don't want to be patient with him. But there are some reasons that he should take his time. First of all, he comes across some spiders. Secondly, he has been in the dark for he doesn't know how long, and he finally gets up to the very tops of the trees and is able to poke his head through the canopy. And of course, the sunlight is blinding. It's the middle of the day, and he hasn't seen sunlight like this since he can remember at this point. And so it takes him some time for his eyes to adjust. How many times have you gone outside in a very bright day from being inside or leave a movie theater all of a sudden to go, oh, I can't see anything. And it takes you a moment to be able to drive your car home. This is a similar situation for him. And eventually he's able to look out across this expanse of treetops and he finds butterflies, hundreds of butterflies. And Tolkien describes these as being similar to a purple emperor, which is an interesting reference because, like his references to trees, this is something that he would have been very familiar with. Purple emperors are indigenous to central and southern England, and they absolutely spend their time at the tops of trees, feeding on aphid, honeydew, and tree sap. And so Tolkien would have seen these in his normal everyday world, because he often liked to take walks through the wilderness, and he enjoyed looking at the trees and the plants. And there was something about that that he felt very grounded about. But these were different. They were described as dark, dark, velvety black, like so many of the other creatures in this forest. The color had been taken out of them, like the squirrels or the deer, at least the first deer that they came across. And remember how I talked about one of the things about the forest that was so difficult to deal with that we don't really think about is the stillness of the air. Everything felt stale and stagnant. And yet up here, the wind is on his face again and in his hair. And there's a certain feeling of getting back to the way that the world is supposed to feel for just a moment. Bilbo is able to leave this mysterious and uncomfortable space for something that feels much more familiar. And yet, there's something about it that is not familiar. I mentioned in the intro the liminal spaces, and Bilbo has that kind of experience here as well, because not only has he had this effect, and he and, of course, the rest of the party, this effect of feeling like time just goes on forever and days don't mean anything. But up here in the treetops, everything seems to continue on forever in every direction. And Tolkien explains to us, or at least the narrator explains to us, that this makes sense, that this isn't a magic trick, that they just happen to be in a low-lying area, and the tree that he climbed up couldn't get tall enough for him to see beyond the edges of the forest, because the rest of the forest kind of rose up around the little region that they were in. So it makes sense that he can't tell that the forest ends, but yet when he comes back down, that's the information that he's able to give them, because he can't see any further. And the dwarves are not happy about that by any means. They complain, what is the use of sending a hobbit? And they got upset with him describing things like butterflies. They're like, none of this matters. And of course, they were jealous that he got to feel the wind. And in this situation, we get this perspective on the dwarves of them being very grumpy and unappreciative. And it makes them look pretty bad. But I think I have a sense of why that is, or at least why Tolkien would have written them this way. I mean, first of all, they are written like real people. Real people aren't on their best behavior all the time, right? We often get very comfortable with the people we spend a lot of time with, and we start to reveal our real feelings and those sorts of things. They're also exhausted, and they've been through so much at this point, and they're miserable and they're hungry, so they're going to be losing their patience with each other. But I also think that this comes from, or at least this is me speculating again, this comes from Tolkien's actual real-world experience in a place like the military, where he and his fellow soldiers were in terrible circumstances, and of course, you were going to get the full extent of people's feelings and emotions about things. People weren't going to hold back. And in a way, this party has been on the march, like a military force, in lands that are not friendly to them. So it makes sense. This is a very similar situation in those regards to the things that he's experienced in his own life. And we're reminded again that they are on their last scraps and crumbs of food. And when they wake up the next morning, it's described as them being gnawingly hungry. And that term, gnawingly, like their stomachs are clawing at them from the insides. That's the kind of picture I get from that. And yet, they can't eat and they don't have enough to drink. And the forest is now, well, dripping the rain through the canopy that's coming down on them. And yet, we get this description about trying to hold your mouth open underneath a tree and how ridiculous that is, because you're barely going to get any water in your mouth, even though it seems like there's a lot of water dripping down around you. If you've ever tried to do this before, that very much is the case. It seems like there's water everywhere, and yet it is still very difficult to drink from the water that seemingly fills the sky. And then we get the first good sign that they've had in a while. Bomber wakes up. We get this description. He had forgotten everything that had happened since they started their journey that May morning long ago. This is all the way back to when they met at the Hobbit's house. Now, this is interesting because, first of all, as I detailed in the beginning of the episode, this is a magical sleep. And like in those fairy tales, sleep is something that you have to be careful about, this magical enchantment of falling asleep, but also having good dreams that keep you wanting to be asleep. This idea that there's a temptation to be sucked away from the waking world, the world that we are familiar with and that we engage in, into a world of fantasy and dream, and how those things are somehow similar. And if you go too deeply into that world, eventually you lose who you are. And it appears like Bomber has lost a piece of himself. He does not remember anything that happened since they began their journey. And I find it interesting that that is the time that is noted, the time that they began their journey and everything after that. And you have to wonder, why specifically that date? Well, it's convenient from a storytelling perspective, because we don't know Bomber's story before that. Had the narrator said something like, he couldn't remember anything for the last year since he was at dinner with some friends in the evening one night. Like, we wouldn't have any concept of what was going on there or why that was picked, right? But in this case, when did their journey into the fairy, the fae, begin? Well, it began when they left Bilbo's house. And sure, the outskirts of the Shire aren't necessarily the land of fairy, but it wasn't very long until they were encroaching on the edges of the wilds. And so you go back to the point that he would have remembered before that journey began, and it makes sense. Everything since that happened is now gone, taken from him. "Why ever did I wake up?" he cried. "I was having such beautiful dreams. I dreamed I was walking in a forest rather like this one, only lit with torches on the trees and lamps swinging from the branches and fires burning on the ground. And there was a great feast going on forever. A woodland king was there with a crown of leaves, and there was a merry singing. I could not count or describe the things there were to eat and drink." This is an interesting description because not only has his memory disappeared, but it's been replaced with this vision of something that seems so fantastic at this point that it would be hard to imagine. This seems to be everything that they would want in this moment. Not only is there food, but there's warmth, there's light, and there's company. this woodland king. There's something here that is somehow encroaching on his awareness of what's about to happen for some reason. Why would this be the dream that he's having? Well, it's the things that he wants. Light, food, company, not to be alone in the dark. And at the same time, this serves as foreshadowing, because, as we're about to find out, this is almost exactly what they're going to be coming across very soon. Now, there's one particular detail that is different. There's a feast, and there's a woodland king, and there are lights, and the lights are as they describe here, but the feast is going on forever. That doesn't seem possible. That's the liminal space thing that's a part of this dream. Because had he not awoken, the dream would have gone on forever, or at least until he passed away. Now, he's talking about the very things that the rest of the dwarves are jealous about because they can't have. And of course, this doesn't make Thorin very happy. But at least he's alive and they don't have to carry him anymore. And in the next paragraph, we get something very interesting here, because for the first time, they're not just uncomfortable, they're tightening their belts again and all of that, but also we get mentioned that there's nothing else for them to do other than to trudge along the track without any great hope of ever getting to the end before they lay down and died of starvation. And this is a very extreme thing for this story. Yes, they've been in danger multiple times, but it's very dark to think that they could just walk on until they can't walk anymore and then die. That's extremely dark. If you could choose one language to learn in the whole existence of everything, what would you choose? I would probably pick, well, something like Dwarvish or maybe one of the Elven languages, but that's not really what I'm talking about. If you could actually pick a language that is useful to learn, what would you pick? Because learning a new language opens doors, it helps your mind see things in a very different way. And that's part of why I am so glad that Rosetta Stone is still a sponsor for this show. Schools across the country should be using Rosetta Stone because it helps you learn faster, retain the information longer, it helps you with your pronunciation, and you can learn anytime, anywhere, in any schedule. Just load it up on your phone, pull it up on your computer, wherever makes the most sense for you. And on top of all of that, right now you can get 50% off a lifetime membership. That's half off a lifetime membership, 25 languages. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today. to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
And on top of this, Bomber kept wailing that his legs would not carry him. It makes sense, he hasn't walked for a while and he's now sleepy, kind of drunk on his sleepiness, and that he wanted to lie down and sleep. And we all know that feeling. You wake up, but you're not ready to get up yet, and you just kind of want to roll back over and go back to sleep. But this is something that haunts him, and it's that magical quality that keeps trying to draw him back into this fantasy. Because the fantasy is so much more appealing than the truth of reality. And I think this goes to something deeper as well. This is something that people can experience in our own lives. This idea that falling into some sort of fantasy because we're unhappy with our own lives is something we want to do sometimes. And sometimes that's through depression and sleeping, or sometimes it's through, you know, other means, chemical means of some sort. So my point is that this actually gets very dark. He says, "Go on if I must," Bomber says. "I'm just going to lie here and sleep and dream of food if I can't get it any other way. I hope I never wake up again." That is a dark sentiment. They are, or at least he is in this case, depressed, seemingly. And yet, in this very darkest of moments, there's a light. Balin, who was a little way ahead, called out, "What was that? I thought I saw a twinkle of light in the forest." And this is described as a red twinkle in the dark, and like in the caves of the goblins, the fire in these dark places seems to appear very red. And yet, in that situation, I talked about the coloring of the fire and how that seemed ominous. There's something, again, beautiful and yet very dangerous about this experience, because it seems very odd. This light was in front of them and to the left of the path. It was off the path, so that doesn't seem like a good thing. And yet, as they got closer, they could see torches and fires burning under the trees, but a good way off of their track. Now, notice that that keeps being brought up. It's off their track. It's left of the path. This is a dangerous thing to go off the path. And of course, Bomber notices this and realizes that this looks similar. He says, "It looks as if my dreams are coming true." And then he wanted to rush straight off into the woods after the light. Now notice he's the first one to respond, because he's noticing that this is the thing that he wants to go back to sleep to get, and yet here it is in front of his eyes, his waking eyes. And the first one who responds to this is Thorin. And you would expect it would be either Thorin or Bilbo. And Thorin says, "A feast would be no good if we never got back alive from it. And this is the one warning that we get, that moving off the path is a bad idea." And yet Bomber and Bilbo argue back that without a feast, they shan't remain alive much longer anyway. So they're kind of at an impasse. And interestingly, Bilbo's usually the most cautious of them, or at least one of the most cautious of them, and yet he's so hungry that he's starting to throw caution to the wind here as well. Now, it makes sense that they wouldn't all go at the same time off the path into danger, but it also is still extremely dark and dangerous out there. In situations like this, previously, they would let somebody like Bilbo, who's supposed to be the burglar, sneak forward and check out what's going on, kind of scout ahead. But in this situation, Bomber keeps talking about all the good things, the food and the feast that's happening, and so they all plunge into the forest together. And this creates a very different kind of situation than we've seen so far. The entire group going into danger at the same time on purpose. And they get close to where they're going. They peer around the trunks, and they notice that there are many people. It's described as elvish-looking folk, all dressed in green and brown, and sitting on sawn rings of the felled trees in a great circle. There's no question that these are elves. They are eating and drinking and laughing merrily. And like so many other contrasts that we've seen, the light and the dark, the starving and the wanting of this dream with the feasts and the food, these elves are starkly different from the environment they've been in. This forest has seemed dark and dangerous, and we know that there's this necromancer in the south, and some of the food is corrupted, and none of that tracks with elves. How is it that there are elves in this clearing in such a dangerous place in the forest? But we have to remember that the forest has been less dark and less terrible as they've continued down the path once they got across the river. And yet, as soon as they get into the clearing in order to try to ask for some help, all of a sudden the lights go out. Every light turns off, as if by magic, it's described here. And then there was a kick in the fire and sent rockets of glittering sparks up, and it was completely dark. And similar to how Bomber almost lost himself in the dream, they almost lose each other in the darkness. Because remember, they're no longer on the path. They were standing among a group of trees and decided to rush into this circle. And all of a sudden, there's no light. They can't find each other. And had any one of them wandered off in the wrong direction, they would have been lost in the forest. But fortunately, they find each other again, and they settle down, and it feels late and dark out, so they decide, well, they'll just basically camp where they are, and they get ready to go back to sleep, and it's only right when they're getting drowsy again, and notice the timing on this, they're on the edge of sleep, on the edge of dreaming, when the lights show back up, and this time Dory notices. Somebody different notices every time. This isn't just one person's dream and the rest of them are following them. They are all experiencing this together. And again, Thorin is the one who issues the warning here. No rushing forward this time. No one is to stir from hiding till I say, I shall send Mr. Baggins alone first to talk to them. They won't be frightened of him. What about me of them? Thought Bilbo. And anyway, I hope they won't do anything nasty to him, which is kind of humorous at the end of that. But this feels more like the kind of thing that they would normally do. They would send Bilbo out to go scout ahead. And not everybody would go rushing all together in order to scare everybody or throw themselves all into danger at the same time. And yet somehow they still bumble this. They get to the edge of the circle of lights and they push Bilbo from behind. And he doesn't have time to put his ring on. And of course they notice him and the lights all go out again. This time, because Bilbo is far enough away from the rest of them, it takes them a while to kind of gather back together, but eventually they find him. Dory stumbles across him, because Dory is the kind of focus character here in this section, it seems, and he almost stumbles over him. When he finds Bilbo, he's curled up on the ground, asleep. Notice the sleep pattern here. You wouldn't think that Bilbo, being in a situation like this, losing all the dwarves, would choose to fall asleep, and yet sleep happens. It's almost like they have no control over it. It's almost like they're all in a dream together, and we just keep getting reminded about that. Is it the magic of the elves that's turning off these lights and moving them all somewhere else in the forest, or is this actually happening at all? And when Bilbo wakes up, he says, I was having such a lovely dream, all about having a most gorgeous dinner. He's basically having the experience Bomber had, but didn't fall into the river. So this happens again, a third time, and they're about to go back to sleep again. There's a reason. This comes in threes. This feels like a fairy tale. And Killy is the one who notices this time. He says, there's a regular blaze of light begun not far away. Hundreds of torches and many fires must have been lit suddenly and by magic. Again, it springs up out of nowhere, almost like when you fall asleep and all of a sudden you go from whatever state you were in before to the middle of a dream. You never remember when the dream starts. It's just all of a sudden you're somewhere else. Something is strange going on. And this time there's singing and harps, not just laughing, not just food. And it's bigger than it was before. The feast that they now saw was greater and more magnificent than before, and at the head of a long line of feasters sat a woodland king with a crown of leaves upon his golden hair, very much as Bomber had described the figure in his dream. How did Bomber foresee this? And how is it real now? It all feels so strange. Now, it would make sense that if the spell that Bomber was under was due to the elves, that there would be an enchantment that would be very elven, and he would see very elvish things. All of these things tie together. That this part of the forest, as they get close to the fires, somehow this area is also under an enchantment. And that makes sense. When we think about places like Rivendell or Lothlorien, there's this feeling of those spaces being somehow separated from the world around them. There's something very elvish about that. And yeah, the woodland king, Thranduil, doesn't have a ring of power in order to do something like that, but there's still this sense of you going into something that, or a place, that mortals don't dwell. This is a place that works in ways that mortals wouldn't understand. And this time, Thorin decides to lead from the front. He doesn't give them words of warning. He steps out into the scene that still seems uncanny. They're singing. They're decorated in gems and flowers and leaves. And they're singing songs filled with mirth, and yet they seem to be in such a terrible and dark place. And then we get this. Dead silence fell in the middle of a word. Out went all light. The fires leapt up in black smokes. Ashes and cinders were in the eyes of the dwarves, and the wood was filled again with their clamor and their cries. Bilbo found himself running round and round, as he thought, and calling and calling, Dory, Nori, Ori, Owen, Glowin, Philly, Killy, Bomber, Biffer, Boffer, Dwalin, Balin, Thorin, Oakenshield. While people he could not see or feel were doing the same all around him, with an occasional Bilbo thrown in. But the cries of the others got steadily further and fainter, and though after a while it seemed to him they changed to yells and cries for help in the far distance, all noise at last died right away, and he was left alone in complete silence and darkness. Thanks for tuning in again to the show, and big shout-outs to our newest patrons, Paul H., Vitor M., Party Snacks, that's a Parthenax reference from Elder Scrolls, we like to call them Party Snacks, and Kamala D., thank you so much for your support. Welcome to the Patreon, and to all 199 of our current paying members, thank you so much, and we've got way more than that for just free members. You can join us over on patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. You can get ad-free episodes. You can get bonus episodes, lots and lots of bonus episodes if you're looking for more content. And also, we have to thank all of our VIP patrons. Let's go down the list. Let's see if I can do it all in one take. Here we go. AK Music Lover, Aldarian Was Right, Apollo, Atle Morton, Azel Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Cali Cat, Captain Legolas Turner, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S., David M., Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B., Gerald CFC, Gimli a Break, I had to swallow there, that was not a mess up, Ginger Fury, Hulon Is My Hero, Jezzer, Katie S., Capenna, Lori B., Mason Weathertop, Matt, Nick K., Party Snacks, Richard J., Rivqua, Rosie Rose, The Bestest Boy, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much for your support. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, this show would absolutely love for you to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen to this on. And I don't have any new ones this week. Well, that means if you leave one this week, I'll probably read it, at least if you're in the US, because I can't see all of them. Just a reminder, I wish I could. That was a thing I had access to, but that app closed down, so that's no fun. But thank you to all of you for your support. I will be going into more detail. At least the plan is right now. If there's things that I can figure out would make sense to discuss, I will be discussing a little bit more about on fairy stories. So if you're one of our patrons who gets the bonus episodes, that's coming up soon. Otherwise, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, if you are having a dream and it seems too good to be true, it probably is. There you go. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.